Welcome to Bitches on Comics.
Welcome to Bitches on Comics.
Welcome to Bitches on Comics. I am Monica Estrella Negra.
Oh, hi, I'm Essie Fleenor.
It is I, Sarah Century.
And I'm your guest host, Danny Lohr.
And I'm guest host, Izzy Wasserstein.
And I'm guest host, Alex Malcolm.
I really love Bitches on Comics.
I loved the name of the podcast, Bitches on Comics.
Bitches in Comics is like, just the best name ever.
I am so happy to be back with the bitches.
What's my deal? Oh man, yeah. My deal is I love Bitches on Comics.
Monica, I heard a rumor that today is our 5th anniversary.
Are you serious?
Yes! On September 4th, 2019, the first episode of Bitches on Comics, which I believe is called We Like Libraries, premiered. And it was just this goofy, fun time. And I remember it feeling like a very experimental time. It was delightful. And I cannot believe it's been 5 years.
5 years is a very, 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 very long time. And it also brings us to like this moment of just like realizing that the work that BOC has been doing is going to be timeless forever. Mm. And you can just keep creating it because we just like always find the best people to talk to. And by the best people, I mean our community.
Absolutely right. Yes. Yes.
And that includes our listeners who you're probably listening to us right now wondering, where are we going with this? But as a podcast listener, I often do that sometimes, especially when there's like 15 ads like before. But anyway, I digress. This is the 5th anniversary. I'm so happy to be a part of it because I, you know, came into this in like the 4th, 5th year.
How does time work?
I don't know. Somewhere in between that.
I think it actually was in that transition between the end of year 4 and the beginning of year 5. I don't know exactly where it fell, but that sounds right.
Well, you know, as we continue on this path, I mean, we are going to talk about the joy that is this podcast and the joy that we have experienced from creating content to deliver to our dear listeners. And, you know, we've always just had like these moments that are so special. And I think it's very important that we revisit that because, I mean, eventually that's going to lead us to the future of BOC.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. It's a perfect occasion to do the ever important work of both looking backward and forward. And I'm just delighted to get to do it here today with you, Monica. It's just such a pleasure. You know, we've been on a bit of hiatus. We'll talk about that more later, but it's good to now be, you know, getting back in the swing of bitches, if you know what I mean.
And you know, like I always say, like the future is unwritten, but we've always remain committed to our work. We've always committed to uplifting talented creatives in our communities and bringing their work to the forefront. And I feel like now, especially during this dumpster fire of a time in the Western Hemisphere, it's needed because, you know, we talk about comics and pop culture, but we've also discussed over the years survival, mutual aid, solidarity, and the desire to dream. The desire to dream and the dare to dream of a better world that includes our stories and our narratives.
You know, I couldn't agree more. I think there are these moments, you know, when really intense things are going on, whether they be personal or global or both, because, you know, the personal is political. It is very humbling to have the opportunity to come to Bitches on Comics and just talk to people about the work they've put, you know, in some cases a decade into, in some cases longer, in some cases hundreds of issues, in some cases a zine, and everything in between. And that is, I don't think we take that gift lightly. And it sometimes can be hard to put into words, but I think that not just personally, but professionally, I see Bitches on Comics filling the gap in between criticism versus appreciation versus artist intention. And I think we kind of flip versus into and. Mm-hmm. And that very act of making this a podcast about conversations, which it was, it's always been in some form or another. Again, we're going to take you through it. I'm just like so delighted to get to do this work and to get to do it with people who are so interesting and funny. I mean, listening back to prepare for this episode, you know, I listened to dozens of old episodes, or I should say not old, backlog. They're evergreen and fresh. Thank you very much. But like, there are just times where everyone is just laughing so hard. And sometimes it's about something very dark, or sometimes about something very funny, like wishing you could be baked into a baguette. And that is it's just to have the gravitas and the levity and to have them often happening at the same time is, I think, what it takes to survive in this harried world.
Absolutely. And
it feels like such a gift to be able to do that ever important work in a playful and heartfelt way and have conversations. I mean, I really don't hear happening other places, not to rag on anybody, because I love all kinds of podcasts. I love all kinds of print media, digital media. You know, I can't stop reading, but I get to hear from people here things that they've never said out loud before, things that they kind of puzzle out as we're talking. And that is just, I don't know, it's the stuff that makes life worth living, in my opinion.
Absolutely. And, you know, as a newcomer, I sometimes wonder, you know, what it was like to be at the beginning. So on that note, Essie, can you just tell us a little bit about the beginning of BOC? Like, can we just like have like a little story time?
I thought you'd never ask. No. I mean, yes, absolutely. You know, Bitches on Comics started with really two things. The fervent love of one queer character, Sarah Lance, which is just so silly, but so delightful. Mm-hmm. And the second thing, which is a desire to have more creative control over the work that we get to produce. You know, mm-hmm. Sarah and I met, and also at a later date, Monica and I met through Sci-Fi Wire. I said I wasn't going to say the publication's name, but facts are facts. What can you do? Mm. And, you know, Sci-Fi Wire used to have a vertical called Fangirls, which was the overtly feminist, queer, and trans vertical where commentary you just weren't getting anywhere else was being published. It was amazing. That's how I met Sarah. Again, we we were like in Slack, just like talking about how hot Sarah Lance is and how great her character arc is. And that, like, you know, evolved into a real friendship, which was so funny because I wasn't really in fandom. I grew up super in the country. And so I'm a little bit later to internet culture, I think, than a lot of people my age, because we didn't have the internet. And so it was like a very magical experience. And then Sarah moved to Denver, where I was living at the time, and we met in person. And it was just so magnetic. You know, Sarah is charming, delightful. And I just got to be like, yo, like, I want to do more. And I think that as much as, you know, the vertical we all wrote for could be really empowering, a lot of the stuff that keeps journalism, criticism, and personal essays from being as evocative as they can be, you know, the corporatization of media, A, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, B, mm-hmm. the chokehold that cishet white people have on editorial positions. Mm-hmm. Those things really made it feel like sometimes we were hemmed in ways that weren't necessary and ways that harmed the work. And I know for me, I was desperate to own my own work. I was desperate to be able to point to something that they couldn't delete from the internet. I would have to delete it from the internet, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I would have to make that choice. And it's so crazy that I thought of that in like 2018, when things have gotten so much worse than then. I would probably say like the bulk of my essays, the places I wrote it for, have shuttered and or just purged my coverage. Why? These are the questions, frankly, I don't have time to get into today. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we wanted to own our intellectual efforts. And we wanted, as queer and for me as a trans, critics and creators, we wanted to make sure that it wasn't just large corporations making money off our ideas and paying us pennies. Not that like we're rolling in dough now, but, you know, every follower, every patron, every dollar we earn, that's us. And that feels really good. Right now, you know, we don't have a lot to pay ourselves. We don't actually pay ourselves at all. And that is, you know, for me, it's like, okay, at this point, but I think we are hopeful that building on this amazing 5 years of incredible material, of being named a best comic book podcast by the Mary Sue, Screen Riot, Comic Book Couples Counseling, the Comic Book Herald, and others, we're hoping that that solid body can help us continue to raise this profile and continue to build this really awesome community. And in fact, we're like delusional enough to believe it absolutely will, you know, like we are delusional in the best way. Hopefully it's not delusion. Hopefully it pays out. What's the difference between delusion and hope? I don't know.
Same difference.
Right.
Just kidding. We're not delulu.
We're not. I meant that very sarcastically for anyone who didn't catch that. I don't think it's delusional at all. I think, you know, it takes a dream to make a dream happen, right? So we're dreaming. And that comes from the place we started at where I wrote an essay where I was talking about a very 101 level of comics. And someone on a friend's Facebook page was like, this is stupid. Someone would have to live under a rock to like need to read this. And I was just like, this is how white male nerds talk to people sometimes. Mm-hmm. Not all, blah, 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 whatever. But like, what the hell? Like, what the hell? Why would you talk to me like that? I'm literally like, I'm paid to write this and you're just some schmo. Mm-hmm. And I think that made me really think about, you know, what kept me from identifying as a comics reader for a long time, which was, I would walk into a comic shop and I would immediately have someone try and like explain to me, you know, how everything worked. And I'm like, what? I know what I'm doing. But then what about people who don't and they don't know how to navigate that space and how condescended too they might feel? And so, you know, we wanted to make this about being welcoming, accepting, accessible to newbies, while also bringing, you know, the passion and excitement that hardcore comics fans can dig into. Off the hand conversations we've had are like, gone so in depth about, I remember Sarah going off about Rachel Summers and her sort of queer identity journey before, you know, she had sort of a coming out moment in more recent issues. And stuff like that was just, we had a home for that, that I think could make someone go, oh, I hadn't thought about the X-Men that way, if someone was new to the comics, or make like a longtime comic reader go, finally, someone's fucking saying it. And that balance is really fun and delightful. And I think we found that by being just true to what we felt, which was like gatekeeping always feels really unnecessary. Mm-hmm. You know, from the start, we've had these heartfelt, hysterical, and necessary conversations, to your point at the top of the episode, Monica, conversations that really do keep us going and keep us connected and keep us creating things that queer and trans people need to be doing. And I think it's just so much fun, you know? And we hear from guests and listeners that like they don't have these conversations elsewhere, you know? I think so often LGBTQ plus people and women who are guests either on podcasts or being interviewed in all kinds of arenas, they're so used to being credential checked. You know, I remember Amy Chu saying, thank you for not asking me who would win in a fight between Poison Ivy and I don't even remember who the second person she said was. And we were like, what? Why would someone ask you that? Like, you're like a fucking really smart person who has like written a ton of comics. And like, what? And I think that what feeling has been so fun to see how that has brought out new conversations in people where people have shared things maybe they didn't set out to share. Yeah, some of those do get cut from the final episodes you all hear because sometimes it gets personal in a way someone's like, you know, I don't really need people knowing that. And that's a privilege in itself. But I think even the stuff we do share is just really, it's been really profound and really profoundly funny. Mm-hmm. I have had just such a good time.
Every time that we record is essentially a party.
Yes, it really is. It feels like a chance to hang out with your friends. Mm-hmm. And especially, you know, I think for, I'm going to say the both of us, we're extremely COVID conscious, as I think many of our listeners are. And so the world really has changed since 2020. And so having a really fun podcast where, and, you know, you can read our reviews, this is what people say, but it sounds like, you know, sitting down with your friends and talking about issues in comics that you hadn't thought about in a while or things that were burning on your mind. And that's just a real privilege to be welcomed into people's lives that way. So I think it's pretty cool. You know, and we started out, I think longtime listeners will remember, as an advice podcast. And so to get that sort of welcoming to newbies feeling, but then to also create sort of a, who wants to have these conversations? Let's create a little, let's all pull a chair up in a circle and go about it Socratic method style. Mm-hmm. And we've answered in that time over 45 listener questions on our regular feed. And we've covered topics from comics recommendations for like specifically for funny comics or for scary comics to gatekeeping and how that can keep people of all kinds of backgrounds from enjoying comics, which obviously comics are for everyone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we veered off to, you know, what are you reading lately? Or queer animated series, which, you know, was a really, really fun one. But those days were really great. And in those early years, we still somehow, I don't even know how we did this, found time for over 45 interviews and roundtable discussions. So where we, you know, we weren't an interview podcast at that time, and yet there were so many interesting things people wanted to talk to us about, and we couldn't help ourselves. It just kind of naturally happened. And then we also did, I think it's around 15 deep dives where we would talk about just a specific comic or a specific character or a specific TV show or film. And what's really cool is, you know, today we're doing this really neat clip show to remember the good old days.
I love a good clipisode. I often think about my favorite clipisodes of like things that I watched growing up, like Simpsons or...
Yes. Wait,
do series even do clip episodes anymore? I don't even think that's a thing. So I think we are honoring a past tradition, or we're just showing how old...
Hey,
are.
Listen, millennials gonna millennial.
We live for nostalgia, people, because we've had to disassociate our entire lives. Okay.
Oh, yeah, we have. Thank yeah, we you. Truly have. So
thank you.
Enjoy. Yeah, so, you know, today we're gonna. Today we're going to, you know, be sharing long and short clips. You've already heard some at this point from dozens of episodes over the 5 years that we have been recording. You know, we're going to share some listener questions, actually just like a little clip from a listener question. We've got some sneak peeks into different things. If you are curious about anything, you're like, why did the clip stop? Just know that this was a painstaking process to whittle down over 180 episodes into one little cutie pie episode. So in the show notes, you'll be able to find the name of all the episodes, who said what, really detailed. We've been keeping track. Again, it was a hell of a preparation process for this episode. And so you can go and listen to all those episodes. You don't have to just listen to the little clip we gave you today. And we hope you will. It's hard to choose the best of the best because, frankly, it's all gold over here at BOC. But we do, you know, we try to give you a little taste of the eclectic and heartfelt conversations we like to have. Shipping goes back as long as humans have been writing stories. People have been shipping.
People were shipping Shakespeare plays and stuff.
Exactly. And it's interesting because it's one of the boundaries where like the art becomes permeable, mm-hmm. where like it's no longer the creators, it's everybody's.
Right.
And so like now we're all contributing to this conversation. And shipping has a history of influencing how adaptations happen. The first privately circulated story, what could have been the first, because right, like people don't care about our history,
right?
So we have to keep it ourselves,
right?
So what possibly was the first, and if you know about an earlier one or a different one, tell us, is called The Ring of Sochem, and is written by Jennifer Guttridge around 1967 for Femslash. The first one, again a Star Trek TOS story, is an Uhura Chapel fic, which I'm like, oh.
Yeah, what's up?
Yeah, I'm into it. I'd love it. Thank you. By Danny Morin, and that's around 1977, and was published in this zine that was called Obscene. Mm-hmm. Obscene. And it's just like so fun looking back through, like reading about those zines. And if you can get your hands on them some, or if you can get to an archive, it's just really, really cool to see how, you know, queer people have been reclaiming stories for ourselves for forever.
Yeah, my first exposure, I think, to fan fiction really was maybe kind of, you know, X-Men stories or something. But I remember really explicitly that there was so, so much Xena.
I was going to say Xena was mine.
On the early internet, that
was what the internet was for a good 5 years.
Definitely.
I definitely didn't use it for anything else. I was just reading about Xena and Gabrielle. But also, you know what? I have some side ships for that one. We also read tons of fan fiction. So shipping really does kind of help you fill it out a little bit and kind of live in an expanded universe that, you know, the creators can't or won't go in.
You know, that's such a great way of putting that too, because I remember that I really was shipping Janeway and Chakotay from Voyager. Mm-hmm. And someone pointed out to me that people ship Janeway and Seven of Nine. And I was like, like, that is such a good point. But I was letting heteronormativity sort of limit my framework there.
Sure.
For me, it changed the way I viewed the entire series. Suddenly, it became just so much more transformative. This friendship that had a whatever romantic component they have off screen, you know? Mm-hmm. It's delightful. So I love that you pointed that out. It really can expand how you view a property and how you engage with it as, like, a person.
When Marvel started making their movies, I was very hesitant because I was just like, okay, so I see that they're borrowing from like comic book material, whatever. But we all know that like when source material is any type of publication and made into a film, that you should always go back to the source material and figure out what they changed and what they standardized in order for mass consumption. So I was actually, it's actually a really funny story. Baby's First Deadpool was one of the first ones that I found, and it was very bizarre to me because it's like it's actually like a nursery rhyme book. So it was kind of like this really like deranged like sense of humor, and you know, because it was called Baby's First Deadpool, I was like, oh, maybe this would be a really good introduction into like his character. And it was the complete opposite. And I was like, this is nothing like what they are trying to sell me with this movie. What is going on? So yeah, that was my first entry point into that. And then eventually I ended up reading The Return of the Living Deadpool, horror aficionado, and loving George A. Romero. I was like, this is pretty sick. Because it makes sense, right? Like Deadpool is technically a zombie. He doesn't die. And I was just like, wow, like this could be like a really good gateway for Marvel to get their feet wet with like horror like comics, you know? And it's so well done. And I love like the imagery in it. It's perfectly gory. And it's definitely one of my favorites.
Dr. Aphra's like, I'll double cross literally anyone, including Darth Vader. You're like, you know what? Respect. I respect that.
And I think that's why she's so underrated within the Star Wars like community, because we already know what the Star Wars community is on. I think that she's like a very smart and complex character, and a lot of people were just not ready for her existence within the canon, honestly.
They're like, why doesn't she do the thing I want her to do? And Aphra's like, I will never do the thing that you want me to do.
And then she blows up everything. Because I don't even
do the thing that I want to do half the time.
Right, exactly. And that's what makes her so awesome. And also, can we just talk about like her, just like her wit? Like, I think she has like some of the best like clapbacks ever.
She's so funny.
Yeah, she's just like hilarious, and just like her comebacks, like even when she was like talking to Luke or whatever. And she kind of like just kind of brushes off like Luke Skywalker. Like, I feel like Luke is just so used to having his ass kissed, you know? And she's just kind of like, whatever. Like, okay, guy in robes who can move stuff. That's great. Where's my money? So I just think that that's like amazing, because I feel like, you know, Luke is just like untouchable and everybody loves him and he's great and blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the whole franchise, right?
Yeah. So I think that's also why she's kind of like an anomaly. Yeah.
And we never talk about like how lucky he is. He's just really fucking lucky. He gets to have like incredible connection to the Force. It's like, if I was Aphra, I'd be like, pretty boy.
Like, literally, you are royalty. Like, you were born into royalty. Like, even though you grew up on Tatooine and like blah, 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 blah. Okay, got it. Even still, if it weren't for like the Rebel Resistance or whatever, like Luke could not have done like all that stuff like on his own. And I just like hate the fact, like, I mean, so many people were like crying about like him dying in The Last Jedi. And I was just like, who cares? I don't care. And I think that's why I also just like kind of attached myself to this comic, because I definitely see it as kind of like a rebirth of like a good and positive direction of the Star Wars fandom. Because like, admittedly, I've kind of dropped out after so many repetitive themes and just like very predictable like characters.
This is why I always think the comics are better, though, because they get to get away with a little bit more. There's a little bit more leeway, and there's so many comics that it's like, Darth Vader is terrifying in the comics.
Oh, absolutely. The Darth Vader series is scary.
Yeah, and Anakin, when they show him, he has a point. Like, his ideas and the reason that he's questioning the Jedi. I felt like when I watched the movies, I was like, right, none of this makes sense. But then when I watched Clone Wars, I was like, okay, this makes more sense. I can kind of see where Anakin's coming from. And then the comics, I'm like, oh, yeah, this guy's like dead right, like in the beginning. You know, it's like he does the thing that like a lot of people who are right about things does, which is then all of a sudden he takes it to the extreme of I'm now a fascist, like an intergalactic fascist. But it's like you see his point to begin with and how he appeals to people in power by his like questioning of things and calling things out and like all of that. So I think that that was pretty interesting. But the comics are the reason that we have Dr. Aphra.
So in early 2022, we moved to an interview podcast full time, and overall, we've had 112 guests.
That is wild. That's a lot of people.
It's a lot of people. It's a lot of people. It's a lot of people.
Yeah, I remember that I tried to make like a list of every guest we'd had on the podcast. Because I was like, what if this episode had every single person say their name? And I think I got to like 56 and you were like, stop it.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to work.
You're like, I don't think people want to listen to an hour of just people saying their names.
Though there is somebody out there that would probably really be like, yeah, that editing is perfect. We love you, Kate. Just some
love. We do love Kate. Kate is the best sound editor ever. I always say, you know, like, do I think I'm cool? I like myself. I'm good with myself. But damn, I like the version of me that Kate makes when she edits. I'm like, ooh, I wish I could be that SE 24/7.
LOL.
When we entered this phase of deciding we wanted to really move to being a full-time interview podcast, that's right when Monica came on as a host, which was like so great because you'd already been on the podcast. I mean, I don't even know, like at least 6 episodes, could have been 10 on Patreon, the regular feed, talking about everything from, you know, Ammonite to Deadpool to Harley Quinn and her Jewishness. It was so easy to talk to you. I remember, you know, because Sarah's who introduced us. And I remember, you know, I got to know you. And then at the time I was a managing editor for a small queer publication. And I was like, I want to like let Monica loose on some stuff. Like, let's see if I can get Monica to write for me. And it was just this delightful experience of like looking into your brain and being like, okay, so you mentioned this in one sentence. I just want to push on it. Tell me like 2 paragraphs about that, you know? And you were such a collaborative person to work with. And then we made you become part of the podcast, and you did like to joke that we kidnapped you, which
by gunpoint,
I think that is a bad look for me as a white person. I'm going to say, I don't think it's good that we would tell people that. People are like, and that's when I called. Don't do it. ACAB, man. Don't call the cops on me, man.
Shitster.
And that's why we love you. And
I'm sorry. Yep. But anyway, no, I was not held hostage. You guys. I loved being asked to talk about stuff because, one, Gemini. Give me a microphone. I will ramble. I will ramble. Kate probably knows that too, but I will ramble about cool things. And we did, like, the Harley Quinn episode was amazing.
So good.
And you know, since we're talking about interviews, you guys got to talk to Amanda Connor and Jimmy Palmiotti, who did Harley Quinn and Birds of Play. Like, amazing.
That was a really fun one for sure. Yeah, it feels like the interviews, there's just so many. Like, we originally, Monica and I were like, well, maybe we'll like introduce each clip individually. And we're like, that's just going to be us doing literally the same thing I said before that we shouldn't do, which is like listing names and numbers. you know, you all can just check out the show notes and you can know what all these clips are coming from, because we couldn't choose really, you know, it was so hard to choose the clips, let alone who we were going to highlight at different mm-hmm. points. But, you know, Stephanie Williams is another frequent flyer as a guest. And so mm-hmm. you can't go wrong with Steph, but I think the clip Ever. We chose today is so much fun. Mm-hmm. You know, she's just so charismatic and mm-hmm. thoughtful and insightful. It's just, what's not to enjoy?
Mm-hmm. Stephanie's a gem.
Truly.
But then we also talked to Leah Anderson, which was an amazing conversation. Leah is like a titan of the horror criticism world, and I absolutely adore her pieces. I think she's still writing for Fangoria as well. And she does a very good job of highlighting Black women in horror. Like, her research is impeccable.
It's deeply necessary work, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That's so cool. You know, we also had a chance to talk to Carmen Maria Machado. What a delight. Rachel Pollack, rest in peace. I feel like that is a defining moment of my life, frankly, getting to just chat about writing trans characters with someone who was so seminal, not just to comics, but to tarot, to fiction, just a real wonderful human being too, beyond that. So that's a really special one. I'm glad we're able to share a little bit of that today. And we could just tell you all day about all the different wonderful conversations we've had. I think what I appreciate most about the interviews, you know, I kind of rambled about it at the top of the episode, but it's, we're always trying to strike this balance of being conversational, again, because LGBTQ plus folks and women almost without fail are met with antagonism, are met with doubt. I mean, I think of, and this is such a weird example, but like, I think of JVN going on Dax Shepard's show. Like, that was such a bewildering outcome for like what the conversation had been leading up to it. And so I think we work really hard to make sure people know that we can talk about heavy shit, and we like to talk about heavy shit. Like, I love to cry. It's one of my hobbies. but we also, like, it's never like we expect you to perform your trauma or your pain for us. Or we're never going to, you know, belittle or challenge an author's perspective. Frankly, because those aren't the conversations we want to have. If we have beef with somebody, you're not going to hear them on the podcast. I'm sorry. Why? I don't want to critique other people's work. I don't write negative reviews. It's just,
it's a waste of energy.
And like, I only write about queer and trans shit. I am not going to talk shit about queer and trans people. I just, why? There's so much wrong with the world. I don't want to be a part of like that feeling that can be so defeatist to be a creative in such an online world, you know? People get dogpiled so much, and I just never want to be part of that. And so if I don't have something nice to say, I just described it like, you're not going to hear it, you know? And like, sometimes people are like, wait, don't you want to talk about X? And I'm like, who? Or I don't know her, you know? Just do my best Mariah Carey. Because it's like all you can do, because it's just not worth it, like you say.
Mm-hmm. Unless. There's always an unless with me.
Obviously. If you have a name that
I
starts with a J ends with an N, and you created a very important slayer of vampires, we have roasted on more than one episode. Listen, you fucking deserve it.
Dun dun.
Listen, we're not saying we won't talk some shit. We're just not going to bring anyone on to be disrespectful.
Exactly. We just had to clarify that really quickly, just in case people have receipts, because I'm sure they do. I'm sure. Especially in my case.
They're like, in episode 25.
Yeah, exactly.
In episode 68.
We are wrapping this up right now. I think we should share the clips probably right now before we do any further entry.
Tina Horton is more of a mission than a person.
At G. Romero Johnson on Twitter and Instagram. Just my name. That's it.
www.sarahgailey.com.
I'm on nalohopkinson.com. That's my website.
Jay and Miles Explain the X-Men, which is exactly what it says on the tin.
I'm Natasha Alterisi. I am a writer and an artist.
My name is Trungling Nguyen. I am a comic artist and writer from Minneapolis.
Probably the best thing is to just go to my website, which is yoshioshitani.com.
You can go to preetichibber.com.
Hey, everybody. Namoya Alina Pete. I am from Little Pine First Nation in Saskatchewan, Canada.
Medusa was always a character who I was like, man, we gotta do a little bit more, because there is a wealth of stuff that's fucked up with Medusa that actually fits so perfectly in the Wonder Woman universe, because it challenges yet again what it means to be an Amazon and what that is like for the women on that island, because Medusa is essentially cursed or gifted, depending on how you look at it, by Athena, one of the goddesses that blesses the Amazons. And Medusa is sequestered away behind Doom's doorway, the basement hill of Themyscira. So what does that look like? I don't, like, the gods are messy. So I'm like, if Nubia is having to deal with a character who has a pretty complicated and just tragic backstory, and she's been, you know, not her official jailer, but one of the reasons why Medusa has been unable to get from behind the door. Like, what is that? Like, what does that look like? And what does that say about the Amazons and the way that they've kind of beholden themselves to what the gods have asked of them, which is to guard Doom's doorway? Because is it not true that sometimes people don't actually enter prisons or whatever monsters, but being there turns them into that because they have to survive?
Introducing Kate was, you know, I talked to a friend of mine, a transgender woman. I was doing a comic book. She said, oh, can I be a character? She said. So I put that in the back of my mind. And so I did a character based on her, on Kate Bornstein, a famous transgender activist, wonderful person. But, you know, people wonder, like, how did I come up with this great thing? And basically, it's just kind of my friends. Just some of the queer people I knew, you know, what they were like and what the world was like, what that community was like. And
Coagula feels like she could be one of my friends. Like, it feels so weird to see her in the comic in some ways because she is so relatable. So, like,
yeah, that's
nice. You know, when she's like, this is getting weird, when she's just jumping to Niles Calder's head. Like, I was like, it is getting weird. And she's like, even for me. And I'm like, yes, even for you. You know? And, like, I've been thinking a lot about how the comic form gives us so many ways to communicate who someone is. And I was really, you know, touched by the pin that she had about being a trans lesbian. And I was like, that is such a powerful way to communicate so much. Mm-hmm. And I see so many queer and trans comics doing the same thing where they're like, I don't want everyone to have a speech dialogue where they're like, I am a trans lesbian. Now, you know, right? Like, that's a little bit forced. So it's like, but it's cool that we can do these visual cues and give them such a center stage in a way that helps us be like, oh, yay, I love her even more now. You know, like that was, it's so beautiful. I really, Coagula's great. I love that she's from your friends. That makes my heart really happy.
Yeah. And actually somebody made a few of those buttons and, you know, I think I gave the last one away to someone not too long ago.
Oh, wow. Maybe we have to make some more.
Yeah, that would be nice. Like, someone should do that because now the Doom Patrol's got a new, like,
relatable comics. Like, I write distinctly for my teenage self. So, like, I'm imagining some Black bisexual weirdo, non-binary, just, like, sitting in their shitty town, just, like, feeling completely lost and, like, no one in the world understands them or is like them. And I write for them. And I hope that they will find it. My gauge for my work is if I can't create this sort of feeling that I felt when I would discover something that spoke to me when I was about 16, 17, then I'm like, you need to work on it again. And you need to get to that place where it really gets to the heart of the matter. But I'm always excited that other people share my story because honestly, I didn't see a lot of work like my own when I was starting out in comics. And even when I sought out comics myself, like I was into Optic Nerve and 8-Ball comics and things like that growing up. But even though it was like exciting to see like people of color And Adrian's work or people of color and Jaime Hernandez's work, it still like wasn't Black women. Like it was very rare that I saw a Black woman that like wasn't Storm in the comics. And so always just kind of writing comics for other Black people. And it's really exciting to see that people can read my work and see my humanity. And that's the point. That's what I want people to see. I want people to read my work and realize that my experience on this planet is no different than anyone else's. We've all felt like outsiders. We've all felt like the weird kid at least once. I don't believe that everyone has felt secure and comfortable in their life, whether or not they like, you know, pumpkin spice lattes or whatever. I still feel like there's that one Becky in the group of Beckys that's just like, I'm the weird one. And we've all kind of had that struggle. And I want people to read my work and see that humanity and almost kind of forget that they're reading work by a Black person and they're reading work about a Black person, because I feel like a lot of times people read work or consume media created by Black people almost in sort of a observational type of way, where they're just like kind of consuming Black work like it's planet Earth, and we're still seen very savage-like, and we're being monitored, we're being like observed, and it's just kind of like, oh, this is what Black people do, and this is how Black people experience the world, and this is what Black people eat. How quaint. And not understanding that, like, oh, wait, like we just have variations of melanin. We all experience the same feelings. We all experience the same highs and lows. And that is the goal of my work, is to kind of peel back that initial prejudice that people may see when they look at me and just see my humanity.
Different countries and like different cultures have different relationships with their own past and like things, especially like bad things that have happened in their own past. And so you have like some places where like, you know, you'll turn a corner and they'll be like, here's where Nazis took somebody, you know, and like, here's where this like awful thing happened. Or like, this is the place where like this brutal, terrible thing happened. And then you have countries who are like determined, or like cultures determined to just like be like, nope, I don't know her. I don't know what you're talking about. Like, you know, we've never done anything bad ever. And so I feel like there's something about the past, and also just the sense that like, yeah, like places accumulate meaning, like smells have meaning, you know. And sometimes I think that you can also have an experience, which I imagine is probably like when people say that they've like felt a presence or they feel a ghost, it's like they're experiencing something possibly on a subliminal or, you know, subconscious level that is reminding them of something else that made them afraid or made them sad or is like invoking some other place. And I think that when you, I don't know, if you like walk into a place and it has a smell and you're suddenly transported back to when you were 8, like that's a haunting, you know?
Yeah.
And like when you go to like, I don't know, like I went to my old high school a few years ago and it was different in some ways, but it was basically unchanged. Like I was like, the lockers are the same, the walls are the same, it smells the same. And it was like really having like almost like an out of body kind of haunting experience. And so I feel like, yeah, like place is important in this way because it does like accumulate meaning, and it does, I think, hold on to that meaning. And so, you know, when I think about like, I mean, obviously this book, I mean, I didn't grow up in Centralia. Like Centralia, you know, is sort of like a past generation, you know, Centralia being the town that's sort of perpetually on fire, that is a real town that I then fictionalized as the town of Shudder to Think in the Lolo Woods. But, you know, for me, I think it was just this idea also of like, because then I was like doing a lot of research about Centralia, because, you know, all I really knew was like, you know, when you were in high school, because I grew up in, you know, not too far away from there, like it, you know, the cool thing to do would be like skip school, go with your friends, take dramatic black and white photos at Centralia, which is like leaking smoke, you know, and covered in graffiti and like mostly abandoned. And I feel like that was like my experience of as a teen, but like also like people lived there, and it was like, you know, there was like a massive environmental disaster, which also I should add is like very common. Like Centralia is kind of a famous example in the US, but like this stuff happens everywhere. Mm-hmm. Like there are lots of like places all over the world where this exact thing has happened, where like a coal seam has lit on fire and like created this like massive environmental catastrophe that has affected and killed a lot of people or like harmed them in other ways. And so, you know, for me, it was just like this idea that like corporations infect the land. Land can be haunted by capitalism. You know, the earth can literally eat you alive, right?
Yeah.
That like, you know, you are haunted by the actions of your elders and like the things that happened before you were born or when you can't remember, or like, You know, there's just like all these ways in which, well, this is not like, you know, this is just like, yeah, things connect to other things. Duh. Right. You know, it's like it all comes together. It's like that guy with the chart, you know, it's like, it all means, you know. Yeah, I guess for me, I just feel like that piece of it is just so important. And I wanted to sort of create a story in which like these sort of teenage girls are like having this experience and this revelation in real time and are implicated in it in real time. Like, they're not just like observing it. It's like happened to them as well, right? And so they're like beginning to understand, I think, the ways in which power structures fail you and like what that means for you as a person, which I think is a very like, that is a moment in adolescence where that happens, where you like begin to understand the ways in which like, you know, the world fucking sucks. And yeah, this is that moment.
Originally, like I said, it was going to be more focus on developing their skills as cheerleaders and going to a competition. And that kind of got pushed into the background where, you know, they had fun doing cheer, but it wasn't a competitive thing. I don't know if Al wants to push to do more cheerleading competition in the next one or what.
I would definitely be interested in it. Sports are really gay, I feel like, just kind of inherently, especially with like, you know, sports teams are very gendered. So like that, I feel like often, especially for men, it's a safe place to show intimacy. I don't know. I've been watching a lot of football lately, and it's just like a lot of guys just like hugging each other and like slapping each other's butts and stuff. It's just like, I mean, it's more complicated than this, obviously, but just like a place where people, you know, feel comfortable showing love and affection towards each other when in other environments they wouldn't necessarily. I kind of went off on a tangent there. I have a lot of feelings about the game.
No, I that's exactly what I was thinking about, though. You hit the nail on the head. I was thinking about, you know, macho football men spanking each other and hugging and like crying. And I get the impression
you think about that a lot, don't you?
Once I kind of figured out like, okay, this green plant is going to represent Jody, like, and the roses represent my faith in Jody and the lilacs represent memory. Like once I started like nailing those ideas down, and like the corkboard is like me trying to figure things out. So there are all these visual metaphors and some of them are more intuitive and some of them are just like literal where I'm like, okay, this is what this means. Other ones are things that just felt right.
You're just blowing my fucking mind. Everything you're saying, I'm like, oh my God, of course. Yes, and that must have meant that. Continue. Sorry. I was just like,
me
like,
too.
They're very obvious. And I'm like, well, then I'm a fool is what I am because.
No, I never explain it. And I don't, but I'm hoping that people pick up on it, like just as they're reading it intuitively, but like don't need an explanation. And it's fine. Like I don't expect anyone.
If the story works and the overall mission works to me, I think I'm clear, you know? So, you know, what can one do? It's very tricky. I'm not like a royal biographer by any means, you know? So it's a little different, right? we already understand that our mission is part fictionalized. We all understand that they are, but they're not real people. This is their fictionalized self. So I have a little bit more latitude. You know, absolutely. So if somebody's like, hey, I'd be like, well, yeah, but this is your superhero self. Okay.
Right.
You know, you talked about the fun and about creating the group dynamic. And I think that's part of what made House of Slay so freaking delightful is that it's a superhero team up, but it's like between besties, you know, like that felt so interesting to see that the dynamics, the jokes that sort of went back and forth between people, the shared understandings of what the world is like. And I'm guessing that you have some good friendships. And I think I just want to talk about how do we portray friendship in comics and how do we investigate those highs and lows and what is important to you as a creator when you are investigating friendship?
Yeah, I think this is also part because I get asked a lot about process. And I really do believe that I'm a much better writer now that I've had more years of experience, friendships and that kind of thing. If you're going to write about being besties, you need to have a little experience with besties, you know? So, you know, like what I'm trying to say is like when I was 19, I'm not sure I could write stories like this, you know?
Yeah.
And it's also almost with any story, no matter what it is, you kind of have to put some of yourself in there and people that you know in there. So there's a little bit of all that And hopefully it makes it relatable, and hopefully it makes people, you know, like, yeah, they can feel themselves and their friends and the conflicts and the jokes and all that stuff, right? And then hopefully you also get to go to LA and just go to like some swanky parties and stuff, and hopefully it's not full of cultists. So.
The 90s was like one of those renaissance decades for Black filmmaking, but there was also just like such a diversity of stories being told.
Mm-hmm.
So many different types of stories and like different approaches to storytelling. And like the problems of industry still stood because, you know, the problems of industry are always present because capitalism's capitalism. But I don't know. I feel like everything is rougher now. I feel like everything now, because social media dictates the emphasis on marketing, there's like way more thought that's gone into like the surface image pastiche of things.
Mm.
But it doesn't always have the same kind of depth
Yes.
that you can only get from work that is like it takes time to create great work, no matter what it is. If it's writing, if it's a film, if it's a piece of music, like no matter what it is, things only get better when they're given time. It's like cooking. It's like food, you know, the longer and at the lowest amount of heat you cook a stew, the better it's going to be, right? It's the same thing with art, but that's been like disavowed by industry and like the conditions that people are being forced to work under. There's like no upfront investment.
Do you like subscribe to this lifestyle where that's like the only pathway that you can follow? Or do you ultimately go your own way no matter how hard it is and stay true to yourself? And I think Mary proved that she was going to do just that. And that's pretty badass in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. But her ex-girlfriend was just
Gosh, I love that actor too.
I love that whole sequence because, I mean, who among us hasn't, you know, like had a similar conversation on either side, right? If you were one side or the other side, right? But of just being like, you weren't really ever open during like our relationship. So mm-hmm. I don't know how you expected me to stay with you, like basically, because there was always going to be that guard. And I think that, yeah, as much as Mary really does let it down too, she's just like, in some ways it kind of has to be there because both of these ladies have way more money than her. She's in poverty. The romanticism that they can have, it's different for her. She's been through hell.
Yeah. The girlfriend is Elizabeth Philpott, the ex-girlfriend, played by Fiona Shaw, who is amazing in Killing Eve. She is such a good actor. So I was like so happy to see her, and she looks so different in the movie. Because she has like a wig on, and I loved that scene. I thought that scene was just like the way it was shot and like the careful movement of their hands, the use of hands throughout it. Sapphic standing ovation, like thank you, like you get it. And I thought that was pretty incredible.
The whole idea of being kept by money, essentially, because like Mary, by all means, should have gotten riches just for her work alone, but because of like who she was, pretty much rendered invisible until now.
Well, right, there's that, like, her main discovery, which is the ick, at the time of the filming, is Ichthyosaurus. I'm sorry, friends, I'm really bad with the fossils. It's a cool fossil, and she discovers it, and immediately a man puts his name on it as, like, the discoverer. That was a fossil she actually, at least in the film, wanted to keep, and she had to sell it because she had siblings and she was a 12-year-old when she discovered it, and her mom needed her to help buy food and clothes, and it was years worth of money. But it was, you know, selling her whole career away in a sense. Like, her big break was attributed to someone else in this instance. And I thought that was gut-wrenching.
And then with the X-Men comics,
Marvel's Merry Mutants.
The New Mutants in general.
The first character I fell in love with was Storm.
X-Men.
An X-Men collector.
Harley Quinn and the Birds of Prey.
Harley Quinn and the Skull Bags.
Harley's Little Black Book.
Harley
and Ivy. Mm-hmm.
This is Poison Ivy.
Poison Ivy.
The Wilds. Red Sonja and Vampirella meet Betty and Veronica. Strangers in paradise.
called Mimosa.
Fangirl came just as you would expect her.
To bring it back to Squire.
Series is called Trance.
Gatsby is actually in my 9th publication.
Which Heroes is in there, but it's not quite in there.
LSBN.
Also known as Darkling.
Carmilla.
I did one before Commander Rao.
Vampirella. TMNT Universe.
Loki.
Captain America Infinity Comic.
All you do is tweet about Spider-Man and video games.
Well, what else is there? Come on.
Nothing.
So I know that you've been listening to Essie and I talk about those 5 glorious years that BOC has been around, but it seems as if we're missing someone.
Seems like there is a voice. Hmm. We are used to hearing that we're not hearing right now.
A presence.
I sense a presence.
A threatening presence.
No.
Of judgment. Never. And Aries aggression. Just kidding. I love Sarah. Sarah, our beloved Sarah. Oh my gosh. What can we say about Sarah Sentry? Well, Sarah will return for our special holiday episodes. And, you know, you can always catch her on our Patreon where she and Priya Saxena host Bitches of X, which is a deep dive inside of a deep dive about X-Men, which is like, honestly, if I had to explain that, I would just be like, it's about like Sarah Sentry's brain.
Because yes.
X-Men and Sarah just go hand in hand with each other.
It's X-Men all the way down, you know?
All the way down. But that also does mean that Sarah's going to step back from official duties.
Yeah, she's not going to be doing regular hosting and interviews anymore, in part because she has this super cool new podcast we hope you all go check out, which is called Best Issue Ever. If you're not on this side of things where you do a lot of interviewing or where you're covering a lot of media, it's really hard to be a critic. You have to consume just a really intense amount of film, TV, comics, books, what have you, and then, you know, sort of quickly churn out either interviews, reviews, what have you. And sometimes it can just start to bleed together. And I know that that was part of what was happening for Sarah. So she, you know, she made the call that like Best Issue Ever is where her energy is best spent right now, which is fantastic. And then of course, like we said, she's not leaving our Patreon. She's not leaving the podcast. She'll return as a guest and she'll be here for our special holiday episodes, but you won't be hearing her on our interviews. And, you know, we're lucky. Sarah's been the best the whole way. And it's delightful that she's going to be here with us as we, you know, transition, which is what we're doing. We're transitioning from, you know, the first 5 years to the next, I don't know. How many years you got, Monica? Are we going to do this for 50? Who can say?
I mean, whenever that okay, asteroid comes is probably when I'll stop.
Perfect. Samesies. So, you know, we're delighted to still be here doing this. I mean, I was thinking about it. I was like, 5 years, that feels like a really long time.
It is.
And it is. And I'm like, I can't wait to do another 5 easily. I sometimes don't, I mean, I have ADHD, so I don't really feel like doing anything ever. Like everything's very overwhelming. And so sometimes I'll get like nervous before an interview and I'll be like, oh, I don't really feel like doing this. And then the second I get there, it's like everything melts away and I'm just talking to someone who is doing something so cool and I just can't help myself. I get totally swept up in it. And it reminds me like I'm alive and I get to be alive. And that is, it's a great feeling. I don't know. I really love our podcast.
Yes. And I'm so grateful for Sarah bringing me into sci-fi, because if I hadn't been brought to sci-fi, then I never would have met you and you two would have never invited me to the podcast. And like, I don't know, Sarah's just like one of the coolest people that I know and I love working with her. And we actually are working on other projects together too. So the spirit of Sarah will be around. Never fear. She is our patron saint. Our patron saint, Sarah Sentry. Oh my God. I'm going to make a candle of her and send it to her. And she's probably going to be really pissed, but it'll be fine. Like happy pissed. You know what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Oh, I love it. I love
it. That all fire signs have. No offense, fire signs. But y'all are like, you know, angry love sometimes.
Oh, I love it. I love it. So as we enter this brand new chapter for Bitches on Comics, some things will stay the same. Absolutely. You're still going to get to hear amazing interviews with people that are creating beautiful comics, doing important critical work around comics, and
you know, we're going to venture a little bit outside the comics world, as we always do. But you can count on having conversations that entertain, delight, maybe make you cry. It depends on how easily you cry. If you're a Monica, maybe you don't cry. If you're an SE, you're going to cry. You know, that's all I can say. Yeah. And we are just really pumped to keep the spirit and the heart of BOC exactly where it is. There's no change to that. You know, we're still going to be having the conversations with Two-Spirit LGBTQ plus folks that, you know, you're not going to hear a lot of other places. Or maybe you do hear them a lot of places, but maybe there's a different flavor over here. We're going to keep shooting for the stars and finding guests who maybe you wouldn't expect to hear on the podcast. And that's just the fun of it, you know, to keep it open and creative and curious. And I'm really proud to be able to keep those things at the center of what we do.
Hear, hear.
But we're also going to start experimenting with some changes, right, Monica?
Yeah, we are. We're going to introduce seasons. And the reason why we are introducing those seasons is just to give ourselves some grace and to give ourselves some rest. Rest, yes. A concept in this world. Yes. So that we are able to, you know, continue doing the work of interviewing amazing artists and amazing creators. And speaking of that, we are going to have episodes focused on new and upcoming television and film, still devoted to comics, but we also want to highlight all of the work that is being done by members of our community in the television and film industry. And that'll just go in tandem with the same great interviews that we have with comic pros and critics. And I think it's just going to become a lovely ecosystem of pop culture coverage of our community while also remaining true to ourselves and being 100% genuine with our perceptions of the art that we consume and the impacts that it has on us as people and on our listeners and at the world at large. So I think we have a really, 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 really good future ahead of us. And we are so overjoyed that you, our dear listeners, are with us for this journey, because it is a journey and there's always going to be twists and turns, but we got this.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we do. Thank you for revisiting the last 5 years with us through this super special anniversary clip show. And thank you to Kate for all your hard work editing this great episode together. We hope you enjoyed it. This was so cool to prepare. It was such a walk down memory lane. I laughed so hard I cried more than once. And if you heard a clip and you are like, wait, don't stop, I need more from that interview, don't worry. You can tune into the full length of every episode that is clipped in this episode at bitchesoncomics.com or wherever you get your podcasts. If you want to know which episodes to tune into, just check out the show notes. You can click the three dots, or maybe it's a carrot. You're intuitive people. I wish you the best. Or you can, like, you know, search, how do I look at the show notes on Apple? Because I can't help you there, my friends. On iTunes, I wish you nothing but the best, but I got nothing. You know, and in the show notes, we're going to talk about what episodes clips come from, who the guest was, so you know who you heard, and you can go listen to, I mean, we have a backlog. We have 189 episodes before today's episode, and I believe a lot of you have listened to all of them, but not all of you have, and I think you might find some delights you weren't expecting in the backlog, so I hope you'll take the time to check it out. I want to take a second to just, like, thank you, listeners. You know, I think Monica did a little bit before. I think I did a little bit before. We're a little nostalgic. It's like a very emotional time. Mm-hmm. But we wouldn't be here without our listeners and even more so our patrons, who every month, you know, at all kinds of different tiers, contribute what they can to keeping Bitches on Comics alive. And I'll tell you right now, if it weren't for our Patreon, if it weren't for our ads, we wouldn't be able to sustain the podcast. So I hope that you will become a patron if you can. That also gets you out of the ads if you don't enjoy ads, because we get early ad-free access for all patrons for all episodes of Bitches on Comics. You can also join us at the free level, and that'll give you updates of what we're doing, and then also access to anything we provide that is available and free for all, which is probably about half of our content. We don't put behind a paywall. We don't love paywalls, but we can use the money. So if you've got a little extra change, you know, dragging your pants down, you don't want to buy a belt, feel free to join us over on Patreon, or you can also join us on Ko-fi. Both of those are at QueerSpec, QueerSpec. We want to send some extra special love to Sarah Century, Kate Warner, Priya Saxena, and Katie Taylor, who is also known as Earth Control Pill. You have made the podcast what it is to this point, and we are delighted to have you with us. We, of course, thank all of our guests. Again, if I listed all your names, that would be the podcast. So thank you for being 112 people who got to know us and we got to know really well. That was pretty cool. Listeners, patrons, friends, you are the lovely bitches, and we're proud to be your lovely bitches. I'm Essie Fleenor, and I just love you.
And I'm Monica Estrella Negra, and don't forget, we will win. Much love. You're listening to Bitches on Comics, distributed by Realm, your portal to another world. Listen away. Find more shows like Bitches on Comics by following Realm on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or at realm.fm.
Bitches on Comics is a bi-weekly podcast where we talk to your favorite comics and pop culture creators and critics about what matters to them in comics and pop culture, as you might have guessed. You can follow us on Blue Sky, Instagram, and TikTok at Bitches on Comics. You can sign up for our newsletter, listen to any of our episodes, find curated lists of where to start listening, read interviews available nowhere else, and learn about our other projects and upcoming appearances at bitchesoncomics.com. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can do so by rating and reviewing us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also buy us a coffee or send us a one-time morale boost at ko-fi.com/queerspec. That's ko-fi.com/queerspec.
You can also support the podcast by joining us on Patreon. Head to our Patreon page at patreon.com/queerspec to learn more. We would love for you to also join us on our Discord server, Planet Queerspec. Invite link to the server will be listed in our notes below.
I'm Essie Fleenor, and you can learn more about me at essiefleenor.com. You can find me on Blue Sky at essiefleenor. You know, the whole thing. And on Instagram at @essie_fleenor.
I'm Monica Estrella Negra, and you can find me at my website, Audrey's Revenge Film, listed below. Bitches on Comics is recorded by Kate Warner, who plays in the band Church Fire. You can find them at churchfiremusic.com. Our music is recorded by Katie Taylor, who plays as Earth Control Pill. You can find her music at earthcontrolpill.bandcamp.com.
If you like Bitches on Comics, you might also enjoy our narrative fiction podcast, Decoded Horror Channel, available wherever you get your podcasts or at decodedpride.com.
Be sure to check out our show notes to find a link to donate to campaigns engaged in important work.